This episode of the Outdoor Life Podcast is brought to you by Brownells. Outdoor Life's Gun Test is the most extensive and rigorous review of new firearms in the industry. And by the end of this week-long review at Gunsight Academy in Arizona, we are all pretty beat. That's because we spend all day, every day, shooting, evaluating, measuring groups, crunching data, and then debating the merits of each gun in the test. For example, this year, we shot more than 1,000 five-shot groups for record. And as our final effort from this week, we recorded a podcast to highlight some of the best new guns of the year and discuss some of the trends we're seeing in the firearms industry. I'm Editor-in-Chief Alex Robinson, and tonight on the podcast, I'm interviewing staff writer Tyler Friel and shooting editor Jon Snow. And if we all sound a little weary in this episode, well, because we are.
Okay, we're rolling. It's the last night of the gun test. You've fired getting close to 10,000 rounds, maybe, we think. Probably drank the equivalent in whiskey. We have been working our asses off, testing centerfire rifles, rimfires, handguns. Jon, what do you think the headline for this year's gun test is?
Yeah, well, for me, the headline is that this test has really reaffirmed that there is nothing more fun to shoot than rimfires. Like, as geeky as we get on the latest hunting rifles or lever actions or kind of handgun technology, all of which are cool, the fact of the matter is when we're left to our own devices, we are stuffing little 22s into magazines and grinning like fools.
Yeah, that counted for a lot of the rounds that we shot.
I make no apology for that.
How about you, Tyler? What's your takeaway?
Oh, boy. I'm a little shell-shocked still. I mean, it's been... I think that one of the takeaways is that this is the biggest gun test we've probably ever done in the history of outdoor life. And
just in terms of the number of guns.
The number of guns.
And the ambition.
And the ambition. Like some of the, there's a lot of aspects to that. So, man, there is just so much to it. I don't even know how to break it down, honestly. we'll talk about some of the different kind of categories of guns we've seen. And it's a spread, you know. In past years, there's been like a couple different focuses that the market's really hitting. But we've just like scraped together as many of the new guns for this year that we could get. And it's quite a collection. Like they're in very cool, like a lot of variety. And that's a terrible way to answer your question of what the headline is going to be, because I obviously don't get paid enough to come up with that right now. But
it's a good thing that, you know, Jon and I have some job security. You know, Tyler's our staff writer and we're the editor. So
Exactly. Well, okay. Well, let's also
just a trigger monkey.
But you are very good at that job.
Oh, so, my God.
You know, don't count yourself short.
And what a trigger monkey he is. He is like the Donkey Kong of trigger monkeys. This is like, he's special. And I mean,
of the 10,000 rounds, Tyler shot 9,000 of them.
I know. Well, it's because we just couldn't get our hands on the other 1,000 fast enough, you know. But let's circle back. I mean, because I think he gave half an answer, which is this is our biggest gun test ever. But let's also put this in context. Our gun test every year is by far the biggest gun test that anybody does. Like nobody even pretends to do what we do, right? Because what we do makes no sense.
Right. It's absurd.
It's absurd. And this year we have hit, like, by quite a significant sort of factor, a higher level of absurdity.
Okay. So explain what we do to, you know, let people know why we're saying that this is like such an absurd approach to trying to review and write about the best guns of the year.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of facets to this, but the biggest one is that we review everything that's new. It doesn't matter whether the person does business with us or if we like them or not. Like, we are just our natural curiosity about the wider world of firearms that is available is what motivates our selection process. There is no other filter in place. So it's not like we are looking at people who advertise with us or otherwise. So that's one major, major component to it. Two, we have always held ourselves to high standards, and we keep pushing those standards even higher in terms of reader service. And this is kind of a two-edged sword. Like, I like to talk about the fact that we take the idea of the information we're providing very seriously in terms of the benefit to our audience, and we do. But honestly, like, it's kind of like why you fight wars, like, for your buddies. Like, ultimately, that's what motivates it. And so I think that, like, our kind of culture of curiosity and professionalism has driven us. I know that, you know, Tyler and I being the two main kind of conduits for our gun coverage, you know, we play off each other a lot and have been pushing each other very hard over the last couple years. And yeah, there's a lot of reader benefit, but a lot of it is just internal, personal satisfaction and pride.
No, I'd say that's true. I'm also, like, possibly working on the theory that you guys are making the testing protocol so rigorous and in-depth that you can just only test the guns and never actually have to write about them. But we'll see. We'll see. That's just a theory at the
moment.
It's
bordering on destructive.
Yeah.
It's a little crazy.
It's teetering on the edge of destructive, but, you know.
Creative chaos does have its place in all artistic efforts. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Well, fair enough. I'm going to ask you about some of your favorite guns from this test in a moment. But just to, like, dive into this a little bit deeper, like, talking about the rifles, like, what is our testing protocol for these guns that we're about to talk about here?
So one of the biggest things, obviously, a primary concern and a primary data point of these tests is how accurate are they? You know, and over the years, we have kind of maintained a standard of looking at just five-shot groups and many types of loads and kind of averaging them and so forth. What we've come to realize through some of our other professional colleagues, notably some of our buddies at Hornaday and other kind of information sources, that our data sample size, as good as they were and as much of a step above what our peer group was doing, still isn't enough to correctly ascertain the, you know, that particular facet of a rifle. And, you know, so really what we have ended up doing is increasing our sample size, increasing the number of shots we're putting through these guns. And that has a dual effect of, one, helping us actually quantify in a more valid and defensible manner the performance of a firearm, but also it is subjecting these guns to a level of use that a normal user will not subject that gun to in a lifetime.
Yeah.
We're having, like, six shooters, everybody shoot a lot of ammo through every single gun.
Yeah.
On the line. And that's just for accuracy testing.
Yeah.
You know, we'll shoot them to kind of evaluate handling characteristics. We'll tear the things apart, see what's under the hood. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that does not help them.
Yeah. I mean, six shooters. My marching order was to shoot each gun with two different loads and shoot at least four quality five-shot groups with each load. So you guys did even, so in some cases, did even more than that, but that adds up really quickly.
Yeah, so at a bare minimum, we were putting two dozen five-shot groups for record through each gun, but in reality, we did a lot more than that.
Yeah.
On some of these guns, depending on how excited we were and, you know, sort of the level that we wanted to get into, we put 50, 60, 70, 80 five-shot groups through them.
Yeah.
And that's not counting just the sort of the practical shooting element where we're just running the gun, you know, to kind of just see how it feels sort of from the field perspective. So it is a ton of shooting, and we are so lucky that we have friends in the ammunition business because, you know, because ammo's not cheap.
Yes.
And we are spending ammo like it's our job, which actually, as it turns out, it is.
Like we got it for free. Well, like which we did.
Which we did.
As enjoyable as it is, like that shows you things about these guns that me buying it for myself, like just the ammunition cost alone, I may or may not suss out in a gun because I'm just not going to shoot that much through it. You know, it just like makes us, it gives us a much more granular look at the differences between some of these guns and like the value of what you're getting in some of these guns by subjecting them to like much more rigorous testing where, you know, the things that may, you know, sometimes an issue may crop up in the first little bit. And sometimes it may take a while. And we see that every year, and we've seen it with some guns here that it takes a while, and then something might pop up, and that's not necessarily like a nail in the coffin for the gun, but we get to see a lot more than the average shooter probably will with their gun. Certainly the average, you know, gun writer reviewing a gun.
Yeah.
And it just allows us to provide more like valid information to the reader, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So after all this shooting, what has risen to the top?
That is a heck of a question. Well, one thing is interesting. Let's just take the rifle field for starters. One thing that really struck me was one of the incessant trends that we have seen in the last handful of years is guns like that are designed for precision and long range shooting. And it's not like they suddenly disappeared, but all of a sudden that wasn't a theme this year.
Yeah.
You know, we had sort of one rifle. It was a relatively inexpensive rifle from CVA, you know, sort of a heavy barreled hunting rifle with an adjustable cheek piece that actually kind of for the price point actually performed quite well. But that was sort of the lone example of that type of gun. And that's the first time we've seen such a small
Stag.
Yeah, but the stag is, yeah, but Stag, I don't think they're presenting that as like a hunting rifle.
Okay, yeah.
Or a crossover. But no, the Stag, no, that's fair. So we had the Stag Pursuit, which actually was one of the bigger surprises to the test for me because of how, you know, I mean, one, it just shot wonderfully well. It's really well put together. It's kind of finished smartly. You know, for me, that was one of like getting granular, one of the biggest surprises of the test. But going back to the overall question, you know, we saw a lot of solid examples in that lightweight, packable mountain rifle category. That seems to be just a perennial sort of source of fascination for manufacturers and consumers. We saw, you know, I mean, you know, the lever gun deal is just still humming along. It's amazing how enduring the appeal of that platform is. That's another one. And then we just had, you know, some really just general interesting hunting rifles. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a nice mix.
Man, Tyler messed up his headline and John buried the lead. You guys need me. You need me after all.
We do.
How have you not mentioned this? this pretty little guy.
Because we're not going to steal your thunder, my friend. what is that you're holding?
This is what we have been kind of like questioning. Maybe is this the perfect traditional hunting rifle? Sako 90.
Adventure.
Okay. Yeah. And it's just a, you know, it's a beautiful bolt action rifle. It's got a lot of nice features like perfectly flush magazine, really wonderful bolt, nice trigger. And it's shot the best groups or the best accuracy of the entire test.
Sure. Yes. It was one of the best in terms of accuracy. We have a couple of standouts.
Oh, did I get that wrong?
Yes. But okay. You know, but it's, well, okay. But
yeah, I need you then.
Yeah, but no, but that's okay. But this really was sort of a surprise, not a surprise. I mean, I've been a Sako fan forever. I mean, a lot of us have. That's not hardly news. You know, the fact is the Finns, you know, at Sako and Tika understand what hunters need and want, you know, better, I think, than any other manufacturer out there. terms of just like the ergonomics and function and kind of material choices and everything else that goes into the rifle. And this rifle is just smooth and slick and looks good and is kind of just one of those confidence-inspiring tools. It just shot like a house on fire. Just an amazing gun. There are a couple little changes I would personally make to it. So it's damn near nearly perfect in my eyes. The only thing I don't like about it is that it is equipped with two swivel studs.
We've been hearing about this all week.
Oh yeah.
I can't stand swivel studs. I am just so, I am so sick of them and they're so pointless. They do nothing. They do nothing, you know? So I would much rather have this thing have two QD cups and then up at the tip of the forend, a recessed Picatinny rail. And then it would indeed be utterly perfect. But yeah, no, this has just been a beautiful gun to shoot. And it, you know, in a competitive field, it just kind of rose above and just ended up sort of, I don't know, stealing everybody's heart, I think.
Well, for what, you know, at surface level is a very like traditional looking hunting rifle. It's packed with really well thought features. You know, you've got integrated pick rail, you know, scope mounts, you know, on, you know, in front and behind the ejection port. The magazine it's a metal magazine, like low profile, fits flush, double stack. You can top load it. It locks into place where you have to gently like press on the front of it to actuate the mag release. So you're not going to accidentally drop the mag anywhere. Like this, you know, basically flush fitting cheek piece with a button can adjust the comb height. I mean, it is just a phenomenal rifle. It's a good.
Yeah. And it is those details. I mean, the magazine on it, you know, we all commented on it, but it's about as perfect a magazine as you're going to find. And, you know, when you look at rifle design and the more you learn about rifle design, you learn that so much of a rifle's design pivots around the magazine. It's actually shocking on any rifle system.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just have this absolutely nailed.
And it's got a, which probably is a little bit nicer than the CZ 600s. The adjustable trigger has kind of this rotary dial of settings.
Yeah,
With a Torx bit, you can adjust it between specific settings.
Yeah, it's as idiot proof, you know, and kind of like field ready. And that's another example. It's not like it's got some set screw that you're not exactly sure how much you need to twist or not. You know, it gives you, you know, a handful of preset things that, you know, are kind of like machined on a little detent so you can really feel the different positions. And it's just easy to use. And my God, is it a capable rifle?
Okay. So Tyler's like kind of become like the accuracy, like whisperer. In terms of just like putting into context what an accurate way is to describe the accuracy of a rifle. So how would you describe that with this rifle here?
I would say it's pretty damn accurate.
All right.
Well, you know, it's...
Well, we'll tell...
She's a shooter.
Well, yeah, she's a shooter. She looks like a shooter. No, so let's talk about... And Tyler, you've kind of led the charge on this, so I'm going to let you jump on the barbed wire first.
Okay, without, you know, a couple minutes here.
Alex is like,
yeah,
let's restrain yourself.
Let's not take people fully into the matrix. Let's just give them a little taste of like, if I were to buy this rifle, what should I expect in terms of accuracy? How about let's ask it that way?
What I would expect, just like off the cuff, not looking at the numbers, and just from what I've measured groups and shot groups and put them in. Mr. Snow is pulling out his laptop so he can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, but by the way, the...
There's actually a big swimsuit competition in Brazil. No, you keep going. I'm just looking for updates.
All the accuracy data that we keep goes into this insane spreadsheet that like other people get to see, but only John gets to touch.
I get to touch it too.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh.
Only while I'm looking.
So... You know, I would, if I, from what I witnessed, I would say that with like premium good ammo, you know, you're going to have to fiddle with a little bit. You know, if you're a three shot group guy, this is probably going to shoot, Yeah, like a lot of half inch or less 3-shot groups, 5-shot groups. Yeah, a lot of half to 3/4 inch groups. And one thing that we've seen and it's kind of spurred on by our, as John mentioned, by our friends at Hornady and a lot of very extensive testing they've done, the sample size is very important. And we've been, you know, for all of these rifles, we've plotted like 20-shot group, correlated 20-shot group data to see like, what is this rifle? And that's not even that's not even perfect.
Yeah.
There's still some variability, but what we've seen, you know, we've heard and then seen with our own testing is that group sizes vary tremendously.
Yeah.
You know, and a rifle that will shoot, you know, one of the rifles in this test, we shot series like of 7 or 8 3-shot groups in a row. And, you know, he shot 5 groups in a row that were less than 1/2 inch.
Yeah. So I'm calling that's a 1/2 inch rifle, baby.
Yep.
All day.
But the overall spread of all those shots inch fired in a row are, you know, were well over 1 inch.
Yeah.
So it's not that simple. Right. It doesn't mean that the gun doesn't shoot.
Right.
It's just a different way, a more realistic way of looking at it. And that's...
Well, just allow me to jump in here for 1/2 a second. So... On the gun that you're talking about with all the little 3-shot groups, which was the Seek and Slam, a rifle we all love, this little ultralight folding stock mountain, just wonderful, beautiful rifle. Yeah, I mean, it turned in groups that were 0.389 inches, 0.396, 0.403, 0.494, you know, so these little groups. But when we, and then there was, you know, one that had the dreaded flyer, and so forth, you know, but when we overlaid those and did the calculation, the extreme spread of those 20 shots that we recorded, actually 21, was 1.59 inches.
Yeah.
You know, and again, that is, as it turns out, that's actually quite a good performance from that gun. That's not a bad performance.
But it's a lot different than a 1/2 inch.
It's a lot different than calling it a 1/2 inch. So for the Sako, for example, I mean, we put nearly 40 5-shot groups through record for this thing. The average of all of them from best to worst was 0.9 inches.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, I mean, it did extremely well. But then when we added our 20-shot protocol to this, and it was with probably the biggest surprise of the test to me, it was with this Sako ammo, which I'm not surprised about that, but it was with a non-leaded copper Sako ammo. They're 120 grain control tipped expansion, they're like blade or whatever the heck it's called. You know, the 20 shot aggregate of that was 1.1 inch.
Hmm.
And the mean radius, which we haven't talked about, was 1/4 inch.
Wow.
Which is incredible.
Which is really incredible. Good. You know, so that's part of what really, I mean, we were enjoying the Sako beforehand and yeah, we were all impressed. And we saw like kind of, we intuited good things about how it handled and everything else. But then when we started crunching the numbers, which just takes so many hours, it's not even funny, you know, all of a sudden we were like, oh my God, this thing is really just a next level rifle.
Yeah, it was sort of the things that you believed while shooting it then came to light in the data. And when that happens, we're like, okay,
yeah,
this thing is special.
But we had a lot of great rifles and we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Tyler's favorite rifle, which I've been, he's been bugging the hell out of me about
for months.
Well, go ahead. I'm not going to steal your thunder.
So the Browning X-Bolt 2.
Yep.
And the names are always a mouthful. The Browning X-Bolt 2, if I can get this right, Pro SPR Macmillan Carbon Fiber. This is Browning's new Generation 2 X-Bolt. They've made a few changes to the receiver. They lengthened the rear portion of the receiver to give a little bit more surface contact and like a smoother bolt ride, which, I mean, the regular X-Bolts are pretty smooth anyway. And this model is, they put a Macmillan Game Warden 2.0 stock on it, it's a foam-filled carbon fiber stock and a preferred carbon fiber barrel. So this is the first X bolts with carbon barrels, and this one is a 6.5 Creedmoor and a 18 inch barrel. So this model is a shorter, like suppressor ready, lightweight rifle with, you know, kind of a classic looking Macmillan target style stock on it. And this rifle, naked, because I weighed it, is like, it's like 5 pounds, 12 ounces or something. It's light. It's amazing. Less than 6 pounds.
Yeah.
And I got this one, this pre-production demo model that and I've done a lot of research talking, and the production models are supposed to be exactly like the same configuration, made the same way. And I've been pretty excited about it since I got it. And John, as John alluded, I don't know how many times I said, I have got to stop shooting this rifle because I'm going to shoot the barrel out.
Okay. Okay.
But then you didn't stop.
And I didn't stop shooting it.
And let me give people a sense of like, okay, this is a $4,000 rifle. So this is, it's not cheap. However, we put, and Tyler did most of this work, we put 73 groups through this thing.
73 with five shots.
That's just the factory ammo.
That's just the factory.
Those are just the ones.
And here's the thing. Out of those 73 groups, all but five were sub MOA.
That is unreal.
The biggest group we shot was 1.1 inches.
That is unreal.
This thing, whatever voodoo they put into this thing, is freaking legit. For a rifle that doesn't win.
This is a sub 6 pound rifle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this thing, you know, in terms of shooting, and we shot, I don't know, 7-8 different loads through this thing. It et them all and just went after it. I mean, like, even looking at like the smallest groups included, you know, the Sako 136 CNR, the Federal, with shooting the Hornady 143 LDX Hornady with that same bullet, the Federal 140 center strike, the Berger Hunter Hybrid 140, you know, so this thing shot, even the Federal 140 Fusion, I turned in a group that was just over half an inch with that, you know, and just on and on and on. So it's not like this is some like kind of cherry picked or whatever. I mean, we threw everything, you know, including the kitchen sink, at this rifle, and it just drilled them over the frickin' center field wall time after time.
We'll be right back after the break.
In the great outdoors, every detail matters. That's why Brownells offers you, our Outdoor Life listeners, an exclusive 10% discount with code OL10 to get the gear you need to make the most of your outdoor experience. Whether you're hunting, sighting in your rifle, or just plinking on the back 40, Brownells has the products to help you get the most out of every day outside. So, for a limited time, unlock that exclusive 10% discount on your order with code OL10. That's OL10 at brownells.com.
What are the qualities about this rifle that, you know, promotes that kind of accuracy? Like, what about it do you think is
consistency? It's all about, well, I mean, that's its own podcast topic, right? You know, but ultimately it comes down to consistency, right? The rifle has to behave in a consistent manner, and it has to have a geometry and design that lets the user, because these are human fired guns, that lets the human portion of it be consistent as well. So, you know, well-made barrel, well-made action, well-made stock, all of that working in concert with each other, good trigger geometry. You know, again, it's a deep, those are deep waters to like really delve into.
Yeah, but this is checking those boxes.
But it, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I mean, this thing isn't, insane hammer.
Like, it's not normal. Like, you can, it's not abnormal to find rifles that you shop around a little bit, you can find ammo that it shoots pretty well, or even sometimes really well, but it's not normal to find a gun that seems to shoot everything well.
Yeah.
And the stuff it really likes, it shoots extremely well.
Yeah.
Out of an 18 inch barrel. And the thing, my takeaway for this is, because I've carried a lot heavier rifles than this sheep hunting.
Yeah.
Is it is a, you know, borderline ultra light rifle. You know, we've got a heavy scope on it and a heavy bipod. But in hunting configuration with a little bit lighter scope and a titanium can, I mean, this is a light rifle, but it doesn't feel like a light rifle when you're shooting it. Like, it's, you know, the grip and ergonomics of the stock are very controllable and repeatable, you know, whether on a bipod or positional shooting or whatever.
And I realize we didn't mention it beforehand with this and with the Sako. They're both chambered in, of course, the 6.5 Creedmoor.
I was supposed to do a trigger warning before you said that, but
yeah. I know. Well,
many of the guns that we're talking about have been chambered in 6.5 Creedmoor.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Because
they
easy
shoot.
To shoot. They
shoot. Well, because when you're putting 1,000 groups downrange for record, you know, and you're trying to assess the quality of the rifle, you know, you want to tip the odds in your favor. And ironically, because of the way those things tip it in our favor, that's what tips it in the general user's favor as well.
Yeah.
In terms of just shootability and recoil management and follow-ups, like the whole nine yards.
And I'm sorry, but factory rifle, factory ammo, like the 6.5 Creedmoor is more accurate than the 308.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, I've got a lot of data on that. I mean, and the 308 is kind of like the traditional go-to, like kicking accurate cartridge, and like they just don't, it just doesn't hold up.
I'm with you guys. I don't want to shoot a bigger cartridges. So
hey, are we going to show each other our man buns later?
Yeah, let's do it.
Unfortunately, my man bun is not on my head. Yeah, I don't have enough hair for
John's,
that.
John's been bald for quite a while. So yeah. Tell me about the rimfire category.
Oh my gosh. That was just so much fun. So we decided to take a little bit of a deep dive into the world of rimfires. And we had everything from the cheapest of the cheap to the most absurdly expensive custom rimfires in this field. And we just...
He's not joking.
Oh, no, I am not joking. We had... So at the upper end, we'll start at the upper end. We had rifles from Proof Research, their Latitude, and this MPA...
Masterpiece Arms.
Yeah, their Matrix Pro, which was just this like... incredibly like colorful, flamboyant, hot rodded out, you know, sort of PRS type competition gun. You know, so we had those at one end, and then we were just like kind of Walmart, you know, type like guns, you know, the kind of guns that a kid gets on Christmas from a grandparent who doesn't really like them that much, you know. We had a couple
yeah,
of those.
I was that
there.
Kid once.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not the heirloom guns. Those went those went to the grandson. That was
no.
The favorite.
You get what you deserve.
Yeah.
And but anyway, so like one of the most bargain of the bargain guns was a Savage Mark II, the FV-SR, which is a much more dignified name than this gun deserves. It is the most basic composite stock. Kind of stiff bolt lift, heavy trigger, sort of most uninspiring magazine.
I can feel Tyler's like getting ready to fight for this gun's honor.
You know what? But here's the thing. Our boy from Alaska, you know, I mean, we've always known he's got a knack for these budget guns.
Yeah.
I didn't realize though, you know, because here we are at 100 yards. I mean, we are turning in some screamer groups. In fact, one of the highlights is like with some of the more precise 22 rifles that we had. I mean, we were turning in groups that were kicking the snot out of what we were getting with our best center fire guns.
Yeah, which is amazing.
It is amazing because this is like windy real world conditions. Yeah. We're not in some laboratory here.
Yeah, we're not shooting in an alley.
No, we're not shooting in an alley. And and Tyler lies down with this $300 Savage and puts on a freaking clinic. How did you even do that?
I don't know. I was just keep throwing them down there while it's still working. I couldn't believe how well I shot that gun.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just kept shooting. I was like, well, keep throwing ammo down range when it's shooting like this. And I mean, we're shooting premium match ammo.
Yeah.
Like not like regular match ammo, but actual real premium good greased up match ammo.
So we had you know, the folks at Capstone, you know, a lot of ammo makers came up big for us, and we can give them all those shout outs in a second. But, you know, Capstone, which owns SK and Lapua and Berger, you know, really pulled out the stops for us and sent us a very fascinating variety of rimfire ammo. They've got all these different sort of levels. And anyway, they had this SK long range match ammo. And Tyler, five at a time in that little Savage magazine, laying down at 100 yards with not the... I mean, actually, you had a good scope on that. It was a nice loophole.
10 power.
10 power. The Mark V. So the Mark V, or maybe it was a Mark IV, 2.5 to 10 or something. I'm not sure.
I don't remember.
Anyway, 10 power loophole scope. Nice scope. Nonetheless.
Significantly more expensive than the rifle.
Yeah, well, dude.
But still lower magnification than any of the scopes we were putting on the center
fire. The five rounds that he stuffed in it every time were more expensive than the rifle. Like, you know, I mean, it was like taking a straw from McDonald's and like, you know, making spitballs out of gold. Yes, the ammo was worth
more. Well, and this rifle, I had the Banish 22 suppressor, which any suppressor, like 22 suppressors, adds a level of like weirdness sometimes with rim fires, because sometimes they shoot just as good. Sometimes they shoot maybe a little better. A lot of times they do weird things.
Yeah. So anyway, Tyler lies down with this thing at 100 and cranks out groups that are 0.64 inches, 0.67,
oh 0.71,
0.81, one after the other. I mean,
that's incredible.
That is elite level performance.
Okay, so the expensive guns, these are like $4,000 rimfires, right?
Yes, they are.
How'd they do?
They did extremely well too, you know, but like, did they do $4,000 better? I have been accused of being a rifle snob. I don't know that I totally agree with that.
I agree with that.
Really? No, nothing. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Anyway, no, I am a complete rifle snob.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with you.
Yeah. We did turn out some like great groups with these other guns, you know, half inch, I mean, legit like half inch or even less 100 yard five shot groups, which is just
like in normal, like variable wind conditions and everything.
Oh, I mean, a butterfly could fart at the 50-yard line and blow these bullets off by more. Like it doesn't take much. So, you know, that the proof latitude, I mean, it turned in just some, you know, screamer groups with the Lapua Center X ammo, also the SK Plus. I mean, it did really well. And then that Masterpiece Arms was just like a stupid fun and easy gun to shoot. I mean, it's very, I think the biggest problem with the Masterpiece Arms gun is that it's like so big and bulky and heavy. It's kind of only good for one thing.
Yeah.
Right. You know, but what it's good for, oh, wow. I mean, it turned in 100 yard groups of 0.32 inches, 0.40 inches, 0.45. I mean, this was just stacking them in there. But the fact that the Savage was like keeping up with it at 100 yards
it doesn't make any sense, it is just
astounding. I mean, it's the most curious dynamic I think of the test.
Yeah. What are some other surprises, just guns that surprised you out of this test?
Let's talk about the handguns.
Okay. Yeah, like, I mean, that in some ways there's surprises all over that category, so
yeah
we had a big field last year, and this year I wouldn't say it's like it's not like a bunch of dogs. It's not a weak field. It's just interesting, kind of smaller. And it wasn't for lack of effort. You know, like there was a couple guns that we were able to wrangle for this test. But that overall, just like kind of a smaller field than we're maybe used to. But very different styles. You know, like we have two of the Turkish 2011 style pistols, the 1911 double stack. They're kind of like they're kind of under the same umbrella, SDS Imports, but the Military Armament Corporation Mac 9 double stack 9mm, and the T-Sauce Night Stalker, which is like a little bit more of a, I was maybe not super optimistic on how that would perform, because some of the Turkish pistols we've seen in the past are kind of gaudy and overdone.
Yeah.
And like trying to be something they're not. And I just reviewed the Mac 9. I have one at home that I've put more than 1,000 rounds through and been very happy with it. So I kind of expected that one to do well. And I was a little less certain on the T-Sauce one. So these are both like, they're 2011 style guns that take, I mean, they're basically copies of Staccatos, copy of Staccato mags. They're a little bit more primitive in some ways, like the recoil system and whatnot. But for like entry level 2011 style pistols, they're pretty freaking good performers. I mean, they have not disappointed, you know, on like the higher end. Probably if there was a gun that I was expecting to maybe be a runaway editor's choice would be the Oracle Arms 2311 Compact Pro, which they were introduced. The company started making pistols last year, is like a hybrid 2011 style gun that takes SIG magazines. So it's got some 1911 features, some kind of striker fired pistol features. It's kind of an interesting blend and really like a very tight, you know, high end gun. They're like almost as much as a Staccato costs. And that one's been interesting. I think it's a really cool gun, a really nice shooting gun. There's been a couple like maybe, you know, early production hiccups in how, you know, some of the reliability with certain types of ammo for that one. But, and then, yeah, I mean, we got 10 mil, not a lot of 10 millimeters, but we got the new Gen 5 G29, which is kind of what you would expect. It's not very fun to shoot. SIG's, you know, SIG's X10, I really liked their full-size X10, but their X10 comp, which kind of has a shortened barrel and it's shorter than the overall than the full-size one, but has a compensator in the slide, and which for 9 millimeter, I'm a little skeptical on those. I don't think they really work all that well, but in 10 millimeter, that makes a big difference with that extra pressure. And I mean, I shot a pile of a lot of ammo through one I reviewed. And since it was, you know, new for this year, we got one in the test and it's about the nicest shooting 10 mil I think I've ever shot.
Well, you've shot a lot of them.
I've shot a lot of them. I've shot.
And I agree. I was very pleasantly surprised, or maybe surprised too strong, but the way that SIG shot, you know, I mean, it is, you know, it delivers a lot of little angry firepower downrange if you're dealing with something you need to stop or whatever, but it was controllable and pretty pleasant to shoot and a very interesting contrast to the Glock. And, you know, not that there's anything wrong with the Glock per se, but, you know, just light, small, doesn't really fill the hand the same way. You know, you could see where the better ergonomics, the sort of, I think, a more thoughtful, user-friendly sort of frame design made that SIG, you know, a pretty decent shooter.
They're in, if you're talking a 10 millimeter for bear defense, I mean, the key, and I think for any cartridge, the key to successfully employing it is being able to hit what you're aiming at, and you're going to have to do it more than once probably. So that's the only downside to that pistol is I found that they widen the slide a little bit and it won't accept one of those Go Gun gas pedals, takedown levers that I really like, but Even with that said, man, it's a really strong pick.
Yeah.
So I guess the other major one that is that Walther compact steel frame.
I'll tell you what, man, that little sucker, I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting going into the test because it's been so many days now and we put so many rounds to it. But that, you know, it's you know, sort of in this trend of, you know, going to steel frames, heavier, beefier, stiffer. You know, and I mean, obviously the shootability just in general, like sort of apples to apples, is going to be so much improved with a steel frame. But like that Walther is a lot of fun to shoot. It's easy to control and
got a good trigger
and it's got a kind of a nice feature set on it. And man, that was a little bit of I wasn't sure what to expect with it, but I kind of became smitten with the gun. I'm like, God, I sort of want one of these, but I don't know what I'm going to use it for.
That's never stopped you before.
No, it hasn't stopped me before. Well, I mean, it is a carry gun, right? But it's definitely a heavier carry gun. It's
heavy and a little bit thick.
Exactly. It's a chunky sucker. So like for me, like I often do off body carry, you know, and I think for anybody who does off body carry, you know, that type of format is one that'll be probably pretty palatable to them. And it's the kind of gun, like, not a lot of carry guns are like fun to shoot a lot.
Right.
Like a lot. Like right. You can practice with them or whatever, but they're, you know, snappy and,
yeah,
you know, whatever. It's just not the most pleasant thing. This is a gun you can kind of get after it with. Like if you want to master your carry gun, not a bad.
And I would say the same, you know, that's like that in that Oracle 2311, like it's that compact pro that we've been testing. It's got a ported barrel and slide, and it is a nice shooting gun. Mm. Like it is, it's one of those that you wouldn't really mind shooting several hundred rounds through at a whack.
Yeah. Nice. With the kind of smaller handgun field and this massive rifle field, does that tell us anything about kind of where the gun industry is at or what's going on there? Or is it just sort of like, these were the guns we were able to get?
Well, no. I mean, yes and no. I mean, there's a little bit of a, you know, you can't kind of always predict. But what we have seen, particularly in the rifle field, is the breadth of guns we see. These are COVID babies, is what they are.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody remembers what happened during COVID and the lockdowns and the inability to produce things and so on and so forth. And obviously economic uncertainty and the rest of it. One thing that didn't stop during that time was planning and design.
Right.
And so, you know, whatever engineers and designers that they had at these companies that were employed, they were still putting stuff on the drawing board.
Yeah.
We emerged from the pandemic and, you know, we're in an economic situation that's not terrible, not great, where every company, but gun companies in our case, have to market. And so there's a lot of pressure to come out with new stuff. And so all of these things that have been on the drawing board are now kind of flooding out there.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the way it kind of works is that there's, you know, in fairness, I think there's a limited room for creativity in the handgun market.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of compact guns, in terms of new cartridges, in terms of frame material, you know, optics, features and stuff. I mean, these are all meaningful iterations of these guns. I don't mean to minimize that, but in terms of just sort of the wide open possibility of creating new firearms, like the Beretta BRX1 straight pull, very innovative new
on the rifle side.
On the rifle side, innovative new gun. Or you take a look at, you know, everybody trying to create the perfect packable mountain rifle with folding stocks, and we had the Seek and Slam in there, which we all really liked. We had the Sig Cross Tracks, which is a minimalistic version of an already light gun. You know, we have a, you know, Bergara throwing their hat into the ring. So, you know, I think that the breadth of the rifles that we're seeing are reflective of kind of this post-COVID energy, and it's, you know, in that sense, it sort of makes sense to me. And I think one of the coolest guns, and we sort of talked about it at length in our previous podcast, but was that Smith & Wesson lever gun. None of us, I think, had that on our bingo card. And not only did they come out with a new gun, but, you know, any new platform is always kind of tough to master. And a lever gun is especially tough. They are complicated mechanisms. And Smith & Wesson hit a home run with this thing.
100%.
I mean,
down to the screws, like using Torx screws for all the receiver, you know, like every detail is pretty well thought out.
I mean, you know, we have been singing the praises, and rightfully so, of Marlin under Ruger's ownership and the resurgence of them and what they've come out with. And they've sort of took this seemingly insurmountable lead in a sense. You know, of course, Henry's done some great stuff too. So I don't, you know, maybe I'm overstating it. But, you know, but Marlin really pushed that category to kind of new heights and new level of expectation and sort of occupied this rarefied niche that, you know, from my perspective, you know, last year was unassailable.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Smith comes out with this 1854, and it's like, oh, guess what? There's a new cowboy in town.
Yeah. Some competition.
There's some competition. It is a damn good lever action gun.
Yeah.
Has the finest trigger on a production lever action we've ever seen. It's like the little details that go into making a lever gun a good gun, you know, in terms of like you know, the right radiuses on the cuts and everything else, like just the comfort of the loading gate. That's always a big hang up. You know, we had another gun there, this like nice Chiapa takedown, but you know, I mean, you know, it was like playing with a razor.
It's like putting your thumb in a mouse trap every time you had to load it.
Exactly. You know, I mean, and that
I like that gun.
I like the gun too, but that
you guys
is
are a, just raining on my parade.
I like it. I just don't like loading it.
Well, yeah. I don't know. Maybe I just need to have you guys break it in because it.
Break it in with what, a file set? I mean, I thought they were supposed to do that.
Wouldn't be the only thing we could use a file set for.
Oh, no. As it turns out, I mean, we roll into this test with a lot of support equipment. And for all the tools we had, we still...
Did not have a jeweler's file.
Yeah, we did not have a jeweler's file. And yes, we needed it a couple of times. So, yes. But, you know, but no, I'm not trying to rain on the Chiapas parade. It's a cool, like, you know,
but it's not on the same level.
It's not on the same level, and it costs more too, yeah, right? You know, and so, you know, but the, you know, going back to that Smith, the material selection, you know, they have two grades of it. We got, you know, us being Outdoor Life, we got the lower, like, workman's grade, and I'm glad we did. They've got a fancier, like, walnut one that
dentist grade.
The dentist grade, which, you know, I would like to see at some point too, especially after this experience.
Yeah. But this thing is such a value.
It really is.
The one we got.
It really is.
You know, the thing that I, not ever having messed with them, just like the potential usefulness of a 44 mag lever gun, because in a 6-inch revolver, 44 mag's okay.
Yeah.
But like it's got significantly more juice than an 18-inch barrel.
Yeah.
And it's so controllable.
Yeah.
I mean,
holds a lot of ammo.
Holds a lot of ammo. It puts the firepower downrange quick. And accurate, you know, and sort of the contrast to that was the Marlin 1895 Dark, which again is another winner for Marlin. You know, this is, you know, sort of a tactical looking lever action, which has become popular. It's got a hand guard on it with a bunch of M-lock stuff, and it's all kind of blacked out. And, you know, as significantly as that look is the buttstock, which is sort of a semi-minimalistic kind of polymer contraption. You know, this thing has an incredibly sort of utilitarian look to it, and sort of QD cups and attachment points and stuff, but ultimately very well thought out. You know, the workmanship was good, easy to shoot, easy to control. It's in 45-70, so it's bringing a little more gas to the party.
Easy to throw a can on.
Easy to throw a can. Yeah, I mean, we suppressed both these guns. Well, that was the other thing. You know, this was our year of suppressors, right? I mean, we had been, you know, sort of running suppressors for a while now, but this was the tip.
We'd have like a couple rifles with cans on them.
We were kind of dating suppressors, and now we're married to them.
Oh, we wifed them up big time, and I don't regret it at all.
Been happier.
Oh, no, with that can for your wife, that is, it's a good thing, as Martha Stewart would say.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, I mean, so yeah, we ran cans up and down the line, and it was just such a better shooting experience.
Well, it was to the point where, like I said, any, you know, once you, if you haven't messed around with suppressor, you know, you don't, it's like knowing and not knowing.
Yeah.
Because once you shoot on a line with six other shooters with suppressors, the unsuppressed rifle is unruly, rude, and unwelcome.
Yes.
Like every year, apologizing that you're bringing the unsuppressed rifle to the line.
Not only is the rifle that, but so is the person shooting it.
Yeah. No, there's a social shaming that is entirely appropriate for the unsuppressed.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyway, yeah, that lever gun from Smith was a big a delight for all of us, and kind of cool to see the competition and energy in that field, the most sort of venerable old school platform we have, that's still popular, to see that thing not only kind of existing, but still like moving forward. It's pretty cool.
All right. It's late. We still have a ton of work to do. So this is my final question for you guys. If you pick one gun to take home out of this test, what's it going to be? Tyler?
It's probably going to be that Browning.
John?
Well, since I can't take Tyler's Browning, I know I'm taking that Sako. All right, I'll take the Seek and Slam.
Ooh. Another good choice.
Another good choice.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I hunt those mountains. I've got
Leave the Sako for me.
I've got a particular deer rifle. I've got a pretty well. How about the Tika Drover, dude?
The Tika Drover is cool. The Tika Drover is really cool.
10 round 308 short barrel open sights. Open like sights. Good open sights.
Light
and fast.
Yeah. Affordable. That'd kill some deer on a Wisconsin deer drive.
Yeah.
Lots of them.
It's a driven game rifle, yeah. Man. It's
yeah. That was a neat one too.
You're not going to talk me out of the Sako though.
I'm not going to try. I will suffer with that Seek and Slam. No, that Seek and Slam is like, you know, in terms of the desire to create the ultimate packable mountain rifle, the feature set and just design that's gone into that is really kind of leading the pack in that arena. And it's cool to see.
Well, that is a rifle that is very, like a lot of, because I've shot a lot of really lightweight rifles. There's not many. I don't know if there's any that I've shot that are that comfortable to get behind.
Yeah.
Like it's very light. It's full, you know, folding stock, but you get behind that rifle on a bipod. It doesn't feel like a lightweight rifle.
Well, it's just really, and it's really well thought out. Everything like the Sako, like the Browning, you know, I mean, one common thread on all these guns is these are, you know, there's nothing that's kind of like thrown together about the guns, which sometimes you see, you know, where we, you know, with all these like kind of precise machine tolerance and everything else, we get this like Lego like quality of this ability to kind of mix and match stuff. And all three of those rifles we've talked about are really thoughtfully considered put together guns.
Yeah. And that Seekins also has the cool factor. Our younger people on our gun test, our associate editor and our video guy, they are gravitating toward that rifle because it's rad.
It is rad.
So you got that going for you.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to bed.
You know what? Tyler and I are going to keep crunching numbers, but we'll see you in the morning.
All right, guys. Good work. Keep at it.
The Outdoor Life podcast is edited by Mike Peterson of 85 Audio. It's hosted by our editor-in-chief, Alex Robinson. And it's produced by me, executive editor Natalie Krebs. While you're waiting on John and Tyler to finish up the full results of the gun test, you can read John's detailed review of the much-loved Sako 90 adventure right now at outdoorlife.com/Sako90. That's Sako90.